Hello, everyone, and welcome to the TMA Ask the Expert podcast series. Today's podcast is entitled Our Lives, Our Stories. It is the first podcast in a series where we would like to hear from you, our community. I am Roberta Peche from the Transverse Myelitis Association. We are a nonprofit focused on support, education, and research of rare neuroimmune diseases. You can learn more about us on our website at myelitis.org. We're very pleased to be joined by Rebecca Whitney, our pediatric program manager at the Transverse Myelitis Association, who will be moderating this last podcast of 2015. Just a few housekeeping pieces before we start. This podcast is being recorded and will be made available on the TMA website for download via iTunes. During the call, if you have any additional questions, please send them to us via our Facebook page at facebook.com/myelitis, or you can also send a message through the chat option available with GoToWebinar.
Thank you, Roberta. The 2015 TMA Ask the Expert podcast series is made possible in part through the generous support of Chugai Pharmaceutical Company and Alexion Pharmaceuticals Incorporated. Chugai Pharmaceutical Company is conducting clinical studies to create original and innovative drugs both in the United States and overseas to address unmet medical needs and neurological disorders where the level of pharmaceutical contribution and satisfaction concerning patient treatment remains low. Alexion Pharmaceuticals is a global biopharmaceutical company focused on serving patients with severe and rare disorders through the innovation, development, and commercialization of life-transforming therapeutic products. Their goal to deliver medical breakthroughs where none currently exist is driven by the knowledge that people's lives depend on their work. For today's podcast, we're pleased to be joined by Nikki Tracy and Danny Stotler from Colorado, and Gabrielle, or Gigi, from New York. Danny Stotler and Nikki Tracy live in Salida, Colorado, and are parents to two girls, ages 3 and 5. Their youngest daughter, Rylan, was diagnosed with transverse myelitis at 9 months old. The diagnosis quickly changed their role from parent to advocate in fighting for the best care for their daughter. Rylan continues to improve daily, going from paralysis at the C2 level to walking with only the aid of forearm crutches today. Danny is partner at the Stotler & Young CPA firm in Salida, and Nikki is the vice president of mortgage loans at High Country Bank, also in Salida. Gigi DeFebre was diagnosed with transverse myelitis in December of 2009. While she has made some progress, she remains a C7 quadriplegic and uses a wheelchair. As a research associate for the TMA, Gigi implements research studies about rare neuroimmune disorders and summarizes new research for our community. Gigi is also currently pursuing a Doctor of Public Health degree at the CUNY Graduate Center in New York City. Welcome and thank you for being with us today. Nikki and Danny, I'm going to start off with a question for you. Rylan was diagnosed with transverse myelitis, and Gigi, you have the same diagnosis. My son was also diagnosed at 4 months of age with TM. And although we share the same diagnosis, our stories of onset and treatments and how that diagnosis came about and our outcomes are different. So Nikki and Danny, starting with you, I know it can be difficult recounting those early days, but would you be willing to start us off and share what happened at acute onset and how Rylan was diagnosed?
Of course. I'll start, Nick, and then you jump in when you need to. If anyone, we certainly would like you to see the video the Transverse Myelitis Association had just recently completed. That tells a very good synopsis of how she was diagnosed, but early-wise, we were taken to a regional hospital once we figured something was horribly wrong with her, and they discharged us with basically a paralyzed baby saying, give her some ibuprofen, the kids will be kids. And thankfully, my partner in crime here at the office, his wife is a nurse, and she said, if Rylan stops nursing, just get her out of here. Go to the children's hospital. And we didn't quite frankly understand that she was paralyzed. I kept asking Nikki, is she moving? And Nikki kept saying, well, she's moving her head. She kept complaining about her arms hurting, at least at 9 months old. That's what we thought she was complaining about. The doctor, initial ER doctor, wiggled them around, said she'd be a lot more fussy if they were broke. The experience at a regional hospital couldn't have been worse. It was horrible. Took her home by 4 in the morning. She was stopped nursing. We immediately took her to Children's Hospital in Colorado Springs. There where we put through a ton of tests and had a pediatric doctor come down and thankfully give us two ideas in transverse myelitis. Was one, make a very, very long story short, she was given an MRI later that afternoon and confirmed it was transverse myelitis, and the swelling went all the way up to her level C2. She was 100% paralyzed. They were nervous if it kept increasing that it might cut off her breathing, so she did have some oxygen. And Nikki, I'll tell the first part and then you go on from the transverse myelitis forward, and I'll try to be as brief as possible. When we got to the hospital and they diagnosed her, even the Children's Hospital there in Colorado Springs really didn't have a very good idea what to do with her. We were told that children don't really recover very well with this, and basically we're going to give her huge doses of steroids, which anyone who has TM or is associated with TM understands this process. We did steroids for several days, and then we did IVIG for a couple, and we did. She still couldn't move. She was paralyzed from basically the, you know, obviously the neck down. She finally started shrugging the shoulder, I think day 4 or 5. We were there for 9 days, and then they discharged us after 9 days, and basically, and they didn't basically, they told us, good luck, basically, and do physical therapy a couple times a week, and you'll see how far she recovers. And then that's, I'm a obsessive compulsive researcher, and that's where I started obsessing as a tax accountant. It happened at late April, early April, so timing never is good with this stuff, but it could have been worse. But I couldn't work. I was obsessive about trying to fix my daughter, and that's where I stumbled on the Transverse Myelitis Association and started reading, finally reading some stories of people with it that have had substantial and or full recoveries, or in at least some recovery. So I saw that there was some sort of hope. So I joined the TMA, and within 30 minutes, Sandy Siegel, the president there, and I think that would be his title, called me and said, Danny, I don't think they're doing enough for your daughter, and I think I can help. Can I, you know, asking me for permission. Sandy called Dr. Greenberg in Texas, who called Terry Schreiner, who's our neurologist in Denver, and within, I think it was an hour or two, Terry called us back and said, can you get her Wednesday, because we're going to do plasmapheresis on her. We had no clue what that was, and Nikki, why don't you take it from there till today?
Sure. So Terry called us at home. Like it was on a Saturday afternoon. She called us and said she wanted to get us in to try to do the PLEX treatments, but she needed to discuss it with her team before she could fully commit because they had not done PLEX on a child as young as Rylan. So she was supposed to be back in touch with us that following Monday. She kept her word and called us Monday and said, yep, it's a go. Get her up here on Wednesday and we'll get it started. So that really began the true recovery process for Rylan at that point. She did 5 PLEX treatments over a course of 7 days. And then after we were finished with the PLEX treatments, then we moved over to the rehab side of Children's, and we were there for a little over 3 weeks after. At that point, the PLEX was incredible. We started to see some improvements in her almost immediately once we got her up there and got that process started. And I think we finally felt like we were on the road to maybe somewhat of a recovery and seeing a little bit of a light at the end of the tunnel. So, like I said, we were at Children's. It ended up being a hair over a month before we were discharged to come home. So when we came home, Rylan was, she had just kind of relearned how to roll from back to front and front to back. She had regained a lot of her motion in her arms. Her legs were incredibly slow. So she was not crawling or anything like that. when we got her home, I think it was about a month and a half after we got her home, we finally started to see her do an army crawl, which was, I mean, we were ecstatic over an army crawl. So we had her scheduled. Danny, help me remember, was it? It was 3 days a week of PT and 2 days a week of OT, or
yes.
Two and two. So she was doing anywhere from 4 to 5 days of outpatient therapy a week. I remember for us, it was pretty grueling. Danny and I both work pretty intense full-time jobs, so we were incredibly lucky with finding some great in-home care to come to our house every day. But and then we scheduled all of Ryland's therapy sessions over our lunch hours, so Danny would go and pick her up and get her up to the hospital to do therapy, and then I would leave about 20 minutes into her therapy session and go up and meet them so Danny could get back to work and I could finish it out and take her home. So she was diagnosed in April. We kept her home all through that following summer. Then we had a kind of a short transition at the end of that summer of being able to move her into more of like a out of our house daycare. At that point, the lady that was taking care of her was wonderful, but she ended up moving. So we hired a couple of girls that to come into our house to start taking care of Ryland again. And one of the girls, Mariah, was actually waiting to go to start grad school to become a physical therapist. So for us, it was pretty incredible because she was really into the whole therapy part of it. It was, you know, it was everything that she did for Ryland during the day was kind of helping her work on some therapy things. But the thing that Mariah and I talk about the most when we see each other now is that when she first started watching Ryland had finally figured out how to get up on all fours to crawl. So she wasn't army crawling anymore. She was up on all fours. So she was about a year and a half old at that time. And I remember coming home and Mariah would tell us she moved forward four motions. I mean, and we were ecstatic. I mean, these were just really big, big milestones for her. So anyways, we kept Ryland home. She continued to improve. The summer of 2014, she was finally able to start walking with like a little child's push walker. And in September of 2014, so about a year and 3 months after diagnosis, we were able to enroll her into preschool. We were incredibly lucky with the preschool that we found, and we have this set of teachers that are so just entwined in Ryland and making sure that she does what she needs to do. So we started her in school, which was an incredibly positive step, just getting her out and associating with other kids that were her age. And then in March of 2015, we were able to graduate her over to a pediatric walker, which for us was humongous. I mean, Ryland was, I'm not going to say she was introverted, but she was kind of, she'd get a little nervous, be a little shy, and we got her that walker, and she just kind of became just this amazing, spunky, wonderful child. Last summer, we got her... We were able to get her admitted for 2 weeks of inpatient care at Kennedy Krieger Spinal Cord Institute in Baltimore, which is part of John Hopkins, and that was an incredible experience. And she made some amazing gains while we were there. In fact, if we could move to Baltimore and let her go there every day, we would do it in a second. And then just this past September, Ryland actually took two unassisted steps on her own and has been continuing to do that for us. And we've been transitioning her to using forearm crutches, so we've been bribing her on a fairly regular basis to use those crutches at school. So Monday and Tuesday of this week, she left Goldie, which is what we affectionately call her walker, kind of left that to the wayside and didn't use anything but her trekking poles, which is what we call her crutches. Through the bribery of a purse that she can only use if she is using her trekking poles. So she's doing amazing. We do 3 days a week of physical therapy, and we do occupational therapy twice a month with her. We're getting her, she's in dance lessons, so she's been doing amazing with that. And then she is going to go do some skiing next month with her therapist. So, and she's very excited. She's been promised a tea party up at the ski resort. So she's looking forward to that. So Danny, did I miss anything with her story?
No, I think one thing I'd like the questionnaire, if they're listening to, maybe expound on is they mentioned that their son was diagnosed at 4 months. I would wonder what year your son was diagnosed, because I do think, heck, even in the last 3 to 5 years, the technology has changed so much that we obviously drew a very, very short straw. But we drew a longer of a short straws because she was diagnosed in a period of time that information is now becoming available and out there. And I think that certainly changes the discussion some, that if your son was diagnosed in 2000 or, you know, that there might be this. It seems to me, and I'm not a doctor by any stretch, but it seems to me the earlier the diagnosis, the earlier the treatment, the better the outcome. And we were very fortunate to have a doctor who recognized these symptoms immediately, and within 30 hours of onset, we had treatment going. So I know everyone's story is different, and they're all going to be different, but it seems to me the ones that we've encountered, that the diagnosis is so important upon onset that the damage isn't near as severe as if, you know, there was one little kid that we were there. He had sat in a regional hospital for 2 weeks being diagnosed with dehydration, and he had transverse myelitis the whole time, and now, you know, it's affected him. Now, I could be wrong there, but it certainly seems that there was other ones that have better recovery time. So I would expound a little bit on her question, his or her question, to see, you know, when, you know, those types of things. We are also very fortunate that at this point in time, bowel and bladder control seem to be not a huge issue. We're still working through it. And we understand and we read a lot of stories. We're very involved in the Transverse Myelitis Association, so our ears perk up anytime we hear any stories, that we are very, very fortunate. And we know where we sit in that. We think, we thank anyone at any point in time that had anything to do with that.
Yes, Danny, I think your observation of the importance of an accurate and a quick diagnosis and the appropriate treatments is right on. It was my son that was diagnosed at 4 months, and that was in 2007. And the only treatment available to him at that time was the high-dose IV steroids. And he was impacted at the same level as Rylan, at the C2 level, and did have to be ventilated and was on that ventilator for a good week before he could be weaned off. And what you describe as Rylan's recovery process over the last couple of years is probably similar to what my son has experienced over the last 8 years. And he does have some significant continuing symptoms. We do have struggles with bowel and bladder spasticity. And I do think a lot of that is potentially, you know, the possibility that he may not have received these other treatments that we now know may offer some more hope for recovery. But of course, there's absolutely more research that needs to be conducted. We don't know who responds to what and in what time frame. But knowing that, you know, diagnosis quickly, accurately, the appropriate acute treatment.
Add to this too, and Nikki has tried to help come out to people on Facebook, on chat, daughter, or I was recently diagnosed with this, is that, you know, we believe, and again, you said, and I agree, that everyone's treatment and their reaction to that plasmapheresis, which is, you know, basically the cleaning of the blood, getting the plasma out of your blood and reintroducing new, we truly believe that saved Rylan's mobility. And I don't know how much of that conversation is out there amongst the medical community, and I think that forums like this certainly help, expand on that discussion that there are other things out there. We had never heard, nor had the neurologist. As a matter of fact, what he told us, our original neurologist, had told us that, you know, they could do plasmapheresis, but she's just too little. But he couldn't be more wrong. And there's a window of time that people think, well, I was diagnosed 3 months ago. This isn't worth it. You know, I don't know if that's necessarily correct, too. They've done plasmapheresis months down the road and seen results. So it's one of those things that having people ask and following up on questions, because what we found with our doctors and everything is that if you don't fight hard for your stance and your position, you may never be heard. And that doesn't mean that's a bad doctor. It just may be that you need to be heard more. So, you know, I don't know if plasmapheresis is a normal type of a treatment, but I believe it's becoming more normal, and I'm hoping that that gets out to more doctors that deal with this type of you know, TM.
Yes, I agree that the information getting out to those other neurologists who, you know, may not know of these treatments, and being able to share that information and disseminate it amongst the community so that we can get on top of the situation before it's too late. I don't know that there is ever a too late period, but just so that they know it. But I'm curious, Gigi, I know you were diagnosed about 6 years ago, correct? And how was your onset? Different or the same from what Nikki and Danny have described? How quickly were you diagnosed, and what treatments did you receive?
Sure. So, you know, of course it's a little different because I was diagnosed as an adult and I could express, you know, the symptoms I was feeling. So I had neck pain for several days. I didn't really think anything of it. I was pretty active. I was a 21-year-old in my last year of college. And I was actually visiting my grandparents. They lived close to where my college was for Christmas. So this was December 19th. And I woke up that morning, and my neck pain was a lot worse than it had been the previous few days. And I had pain radiating down on my arms. And as the day progressed, the pain got worse and worse, and I just kind of wrote it off as that I had lifted like a heavy bag the day before, and that I just must have pinched a nerve or done something minor. My grandmother and I were actually at the mall, and on the way home, I was in so much pain, I reclined the chair back in the car, and it was very hard to get comfortable. And we got back to her house, and it just kept getting worse and worse. And the pain became so severe that I decided that it was time for me to go see a doctor to deal with the pain. I had no idea what was actually happening. So I got up to go. It was a weekend. It was a Saturday, I think. And I went to my computer to look up a walk-in clinic nearby so that I could go and get some sort of pain medication. And as I went to use my keyboard and trackpad, I was a righty. I realized my right hand, my fingers weren't working. And so at that point, I still didn't really have any idea what was happening, but it was a little more clear to me that I needed to go see a doctor. So I gathered up my belongings, and my grandmother and I, she lived in an apartment building. We went to the elevator to go down to the garage where her car was. And as I was waiting for the elevator, I almost fell over. My legs were starting to give out. And my last steps were walking from the elevator to her car. And I remember having to lift my legs into the car because I didn't have the strength to actually pull them in myself. And so we got to the emergency room, and we have no memory of how I got out of the car. Somehow, I don't know if my grandmother, my very strong grandmother, lifted me or what, but I was diagnosed pretty quickly. They did an MRI of my brain, cervical and thoracic spine, and saw an area of inflammation between C5 and C7. And at this point, I had no movement from the chest down. Neither of my hands were working, and I had no sensation either at that point. And so I was diagnosed very quickly with transverse myelitis that night. I was diagnosed and started on high-dose IV steroids almost immediately. And it was, you know, I was in the hospital for around 2 weeks. I received plasmapheresis or PLEX. I think I received 5 doses. It's all kind of a little hard to remember though, because there was a lot going on. And I remember being tested for every bacteria and virus infection, and everything was coming back normal. So we just continued the steroids, and I tapered off down to an oral steroid and the PLEX, and was transferred to a rehabilitation hospital nearby, where I was there. I was there for around 2 months, so in the acute care hospital for 2 weeks, and then a rehab hospital for 2 months. And I did continue to improve in the rehab hospital. They weren't very positive at that hospital. They kind of told me that what I had was what I was going to get, and I needed to just deal with it and learn how to live my life, which I was not, I didn't really want to accept. So I just continued to do therapy, work really hard. It was my last year of college, and I needed to finish, I was writing to graduate, we had to write a senior thesis. I had luckily been finished with all my classes before, but was also wanted to make sure I graduated on time, because I didn't know when I was going to get better or and be able to go back to school. So I, while doing all the therapy I could possibly do, I also worked on making sure I could graduate on time. And my school was very lucky to have been at a small school that was willing to work with me because of the, you know, obviously very unique situation. And so I continue to do therapy. I've done outpatient therapy. I've also gone to the International Center for Spinal Cord Injury at Kennedy Krieger Institute in Baltimore, where I go every 6 months. And at home I do FES biking, and I have a standing frame, and I try to just stay as active as possible by doing weights and yeah, so I continue to improve. It's slow. I still have to use a wheelchair. I can't walk independently, but my arms have gotten a lot stronger. I have finger function in one hand, which is very useful. It's not my right hand, even though I was a righty, so I've learned how to be a lefty. And I have regained sensation, but still have other issues with spasticity and neuropathic pain and bladder and bowel issues as well. So I've made improvements, but, you know, it's not what I – and I didn't – you know, I no one ever expects anything like this to happen to them. So – but I am really grateful for the progress I've made so far, and yeah, and happy that I was treated and diagnosed so quickly.
I think it's interesting to note in your story, Gigi, that you also received the PLEX and have a slightly, you know, different outcome. But I'm also hearing that what you feel is key is your persistence, your own persistence, and your hope, and that you are still recovering this far out from the initial onset, and still working. And you were still able to finish your education and graduate. And I'm curious if the diagnosis, if it changed your educational or career track. I know you're pursuing a degree in public health right now, but is that what you had intended previously? How has the diagnosis changed that course of life for you?
Right. So when I was in my last year of college, I didn't really have any idea what I wanted to do. At the time, I was exploring different options for after graduation. And I had never really thought about public health as a potential career path. I was actually working in public health, doing research, but didn't really make the connection to that could be a potential career goal. I had a part-time job doing research for an evaluation study. And so when this happened to me, it took me a little while to start thinking about my future career path, because I was just dealing with the, you know, going from being a completely independent person to then needing help to do basically everything and having to relearn how to do basic things like getting dressed, brushing my teeth, all these basic things. I focused on that for a while, but once it got to the point where I was a little more stable and had regained more function and had figured out the new systems with which I could, you know, accomplish the things I did before, I thought about how lucky I was that I knew a lot about the healthcare system to begin with, and I was pretty aware of what was happening to me. I understood, I had learned about myelin and new information and enough to be able to understand my diagnosis. And I just thought about how if I, I was lucky enough to also have insurance. So all of these different things made me think about, how things could have been different. And I just then realized that public health was the right path for me in terms of next steps, because it kind of put together all these different things I was experiencing, and so I then decided to apply to a master's program in public health, where I learned even more about the field, and have really enjoyed my time in that program, and then from there decided to go back to school again for a doctorate in public health.
I think that's awesome. I think it's incredible that you've taken something that could have potentially stopped everything right in its tracks, and you've turned it into something that you can take different aspects of your life and work it to give you a career and to further you and others down the road. Danny and Nikki, I have a question for the both of you. Did either of you have or experience a turning point or a moment where you obviously realized that this diagnosis drastically changes your family and your daughter's life, but did you have a point where you decided you weren't going to allow it to impact the quality or the course of your lives? And when was that? And how do you, as parents, as advocates for Rylan, take steps to, continue to motivate her and to ensure that the diagnosis doesn't control absolutely everything in life?
I think the best thing. Go ahead, Nick.
Okay. I can start with that one. I think, Danny and I have been really lucky through this whole process in that, I think as a parent, you have an image in your life or a picture of what your life was supposed to be, and then literally in a matter of hours, that picture of what your life is, it changes, and it changes drastically. And Danny and I have been really lucky through this whole process, and that it's not to say that we don't have our down times, because we most definitely do, but we've been really lucky in that when one of us is down, the other one we're doing all right, and we're kind of able to keep things going and get the other person back up. We have learned over the past 2.5 years that we celebrate the small things, because the small things are huge successes in our family. I think for me, watching the interaction between Rylan and her sister Nola and Rylan and her friends, and how kids don't treat Rylan any different. In fact, if Rylan thinks that we're hard on her for using her crutches or her trekking poles, you should listen to some other 3-year-olds really get on her about using what she's supposed to be using and telling her what she should do. I think that honestly, the turning point for me was last June, so June of 2014. There was a conference that I went to at Disneyland, and to be totally honest, me going to the conference, there was absolutely no point in me going, but the president of the bank was like, go to this conference and take your family with you. You guys deserve it. Just go. So we went, and Danny and I kind of like hemmed and hawed about it. Like, should we go? Is it worth it to go? Like, it's going to be hard. Like, what do we do? And we went, and we watched two little girls just have the time of their lives. And we felt, I think it for me, that was the first time that we felt normal. It wasn't a week of therapies. It wasn't a week of like worry. It was just like a week of going and having fun and doing what other families go out and do. And I think for me, that was kind of a springboard for us to just be like, this is our lives, and we can either sit here and wallow in what didn't work out for us and what we think we don't have, or we can kind of take a step back and say, we are so much stronger and so much better as a family unit having gone through all of this, and we have had the ability to really just be surrounded by some incredible friends and family that have just, you know, dropped everything for us. I look at when Rylan was diagnosed, I called my mom, because what else, I mean, what do? You call your mom first, you know, at 4:30 in the morning when we're not sure what to do, but we know we're packing up to get up to the Springs, and I tell my mom I need her, and literally within half an hour, my mom is making a 12-hour trek across the country to be here, and she doesn't go home for a month. She packs, I think, 5 days worth of clothes. And then my dad came. I don't ever remember staying at home by myself with my dad, but my dad came and took care of Nola for 2 weeks. I mean, it just, we just have really had the opportunity to realize that we're surrounded by some incredibly family and friends who would do anything for us. So that was my very long-winded answer to that question.
Well, I'd like to add to a little bit of that. The last part of that is there's a couple things. When it comes to that question, there has never been a moment in time for me, because, you know, there's instances, and the best part about this so far is there continues to be moments in time. There's not just one part where I said, we can do this. You know, a lot of those times are when I have a buddy who comes in to see us from, they hadn't seen us in a month or 6 months, and their eyes are just blazing wide open how beautiful and amazing that Rylan continues to be and continues to improve. And we see her every day. So the minute differences we may not see that other people who are, you know, distant from her see, it continues to help us go forward. And the last part of that question, we had a very tragic incident in my family where we lost my sister and her two kids at a very, very drastically, very quick, and a horrible time, not too long after Rylan was diagnosed, less than a year. And it makes you step back and think how precious life can be and how precious life is. And the fact is that, you know, I had to finally face the mirror that, you know, we have life. My sister, her kids are gone, and we need to celebrate every minute we have and do it in a positive fashion with the time we have. And this is kind of funny too, that the last part of this question says, when was that, and what do you do for your family and yourselves to stay motivated to ensure you don't allow the diagnosis to take control over your aspects of your life? The best part about being a parent is you can incredibly, rightfully or wrong, manipulate your kids. And Rylan is being manipulated into doing things she doesn't know she can do. For instance, she has her walker, and she does a lot of jumping with her walker, and we want her to take what we call princess steps, and that's so that she takes actual steps and works on walking independently. Well, we're transferring her to walking crutches, which she calls her sparkles. So we grab her sparkles, and she doesn't have anything like on her walker. She has a basket she can carry all of her stuff in, and her stuff's very important, which can, you know, sometimes it's a blanket, sometimes it's a quarter, whatever it is. It's a stuffed animal. Sometimes it's, you know, food she finds on the ground, whatever. But she doesn't have that with her crutches, so we buy her a special purse, and the only time she gets to play with her special purse is when she's with her sparkles. And she has they've hung on to that at her little school she goes to. So the last 3 days at school, well, 2 days, three today, she hasn't touched her walker while she was inside. She's walked all day because she wants her new purse. So, you know, there's a lot of motivating factors, and unfortunately we can manipulate our little kiddo into doing things that she's not aware she's doing physically by basically bribing her, and it's worked out well.
I think the other thing, too, is that we don't, like, there isn't a moment of, I guess, feeling sorry for Rylan. There's a lot of empowering, and there's a lot of focusing on the positive rather than focusing on the negative. You'll never see me publicly say anything negative about where Rylan is at, and that's just a decision that I've had to make for myself, because I don't want anybody looking at Rylan and feeling feeling bad for her. You should look at her. If you take a minute and watch the video with the ASAP challenge, you should look at her and feel inspired. And I am lucky enough, I think Danny is lucky enough, that every night, you know, we go in and check on Rylan before you go to bed, and you look at her, and she's perfect. And I am so inspired and proud, and just I feel so incredibly lucky that I get to be her mom, and I get to go through this journey with her. So
I think that's, you know, what you both say is so key and so important, is, you know, with how severely the diagnosis can impact even, you know, a small child or an adult. The fact that we still have the life to live and to make the most of it, and to be grateful that we can continue to move on, maybe a key factor in handling the negative aspects of the diagnosis. I'm very moved by your story. And yours too, Gigi. I'm curious, you know, if there was a young college student recently diagnosed, or even one of our own children that, you know, lived with this for most of their life and looking to their future, or any adult that suddenly faced with the same diagnosis, is there anything you would want them to know, anything that you've learned that's allowed you to carry on, anything you would share with them? I'm just curious.
Yeah, so kind of echoing what Danny and Nikki said, I really try to focus on what I have rather than what I don't have, because and, you know, that's sometimes not easy. There are times where things are more difficult than they used to be, and it can be upsetting. But, you know, I know what it's like to have to be in the hospital and not be able to move anything at all, and to have to need someone to do basically everything for me, brush my teeth for me, brush my hair. And so being able to do, being appreciative of the fact that I can do almost everything I used to be able to do, you know, for myself in terms of being independent. It just takes longer and is different than it was then. But I try really hard to focus on what I have rather than what I don't have. And I think that, you know, for someone who's newly diagnosed, I think, you know, acknowledging that it's not easy. You know, it is a tough experience. And, you know, as an adult too, you know what it was like before. And so I can see how it would be easy for someone to always wish that they, you know, were like how they were before. But I think the hardest time is the beginning, like right after getting diagnosed and trying to adapt. And I think it really does get easier as time goes on. And life, yeah, just you figure out different ways of doing things, and I don't know, it's possible to keep going and to be, you know, I'm a C7 quadriplegic, and I managed to you know, I can cook for myself, I get myself dressed, you know, I take care of my cats, I, you know, there's, it's like, it's even with all the challenges of that I can't move my legs at all, I can't, you know, I can't walk, my hands don't work well, I still am able to do so much. And I think, I don't know, I think it's just good to keep in mind that even though a lot has been lost, like there's still a lot that I have, or that anyone has. And so
and speaking from our side, our point, you don't know how just the last 2 minutes of listening to you speak, how much that makes our hearts jump, because it allows us as parents with little kids who fear every future and every bully or everything that's going to be coming, you know, you certainly put a big lump in my throat to the point where I know she can do it. And you know, we don't need to thank each other here, but thank you. I mean, it just being here in that capacity, it certainly brings a lot more positiveness towards future, hearing you explain that.
Thank you. Yeah, and Rylan, I loved watching the video and seeing Rylan's face. She's got such a look of determination while she's doing the FES fight. It was great to see that. But yeah.
Very good.
Yes, I love that we can actually, while we're the same, we're different. We can still learn from each other's stories, and it's great to be able to connect with others who understand that same diagnosis that we share and can help us through the differences or, you know, looking towards the future. And Gigi, I'm intrigued too that you live in New York City. I myself am in very small town America. So can you tell us a little bit about living on your own in such a big city, maybe some of the pros and cons? Did you ever think it would be impossible or difficult to be there? Anything about living on your own and navigating such a big place?
Yeah, so when I was first diagnosed, and really up until fairly recently, I did not think that I would be able to live alone. But I do. I manage to, you know, I get myself into bed at night and out of bed in the morning, and, you know, and get myself on the subway or bus to get to work or, you know, to any place I have to go. I'm from New York City, so I kind of knew the deal, but I also have learned a lot since this, since being diagnosed with transverse myelitis, about the lack of accessibility in public spaces, and in New York City, the subway system is not very wheelchair accessible, so I have gotten a new perspective on that. But yeah, it's definitely an interesting and different experience than when I grew up here and, you know, was able to take the stairs or go into any location that had steps in front of it. But I think, yeah, I mean, I think it's just, I never, yeah, as a C7 quad, I don't know. I never thought I could live alone, but I am able to do it, and it's tough sometimes. It takes me like probably five times the amount of time it takes the average person to do, you know, to clean my house or get dressed, but I am able to do it, and I'm really happy that I am.
No, that's great. And I think you're a great role model for our children. My son was recently, he's only 8, but he's been asked twice within the last week where he plans to go to college. And he kind of looks at me sideways like, wait a minute. But, you know, I want him to know, and I know that he just from listening to Danny and Nikki, that they have the same hopes and dreams for Rylan, that, you know, our children will be able to move on with their futures. They will be able to go to college and live on their own and have families and friends that support them.
Yeah, definitely.
It looks like we're...
It just takes a little bit more. You just have to figure out more things, but it's totally possible.
I do think, and maybe I'm jumping the gun here, but we only have about 10 minutes left. There's a question coming up that and again, I'm jumping it, but I want to make sure we address some of these things. So have we moved on to, let me see, Nikki, Danny, parents, young child, do you have anything that would you like to say to other families that are going through this? Are we to that question yet? I think that's incredibly
Absolutely.
Important.
Absolutely.
Okay. I'll let you read that question because I'd certainly like to address this before our time runs out.
Yes. It's basically just, if there's anything that you learned that, you know, you wish someone may have told you early on, anything you would say to a family that's going through this,
that
you
first
think is
thing,
absolutely important.
Sure. The first thing is, I would go back, and every time we go to Rylan's rehab and neurologist and urologist and pulmonologist, you name it, we try to hit them all out. every time we go there, we tell them, Nikki and I are in an open book for families. Here's our name. Here's our number. If you have anyone come into this, give them our name and have them call us. We would love to talk to families who are going through what we went through, because we went through as rookies. And if we had someone to talk to that knew what was going on, and that's where this Transverse Myelitis Association comes in, is because they started this. But we want to reach out to those families, and here's some of the things we would tell you. Fight like hell for your kid. And what I mean by that is all the doctors, even the good ones, aren't right all of the time. For instance, we were on the verge of catheterizing Rylan, or the doctors were on the verge of making us do that. And we knew how that could impact her at that point, but she had been urinating and going to the bathroom without seemingly any incontinence or being able to go freely. We didn't know if she can hold it, and still, quite frankly, do we know how well she can, but we knew she could go. And the doctors, even though they were in children, they're very good doctors, they were blatantly just kind of putting with a big broad brush, because this is a symptoms of TM, that we were going to have to do this. And of course, if you don't have to do something like that, you wouldn't want to do it. I think the folks who have to do those things would wish they didn't have to do them. I'm sure of that. So they basically said, well, here's your alternative. You're going to have to sit with a pee blanket on your lap for the most part all day, and we're going to have to witness that she is going to the bathroom normally. And Nikki and I looked at each other, like, and it was more of a, you're not going to want to do this. Let's just catheter. And we looked at the doctor in the eye and said, okay, where's the blankets? And we sat down and we watched movies after movies, and they fed her more water and everything they could to get her to go. And she continued to be able to go. And if it wasn't for that, and if we would have went blindly into this, we may be still catheting her today because we didn't know any better. I know maybe that's a little instance, but it's one of those little instances where you got to hold your ground and learn from, and you just can't take everyone's word as a grain of salt and go with it. You have to fight for those instances and have your own voice heard. And you need to have those things explained to you in detail from these doctors so that you can make a very conscious decision on how to have these treatments. How to administer these treatments, what types of medications are they putting in. More importantly, one of the biggest things we learned, whether you like it or not, they've linked vaccines to transverse myelitis. Now, I'm not saying there's 100% proof, but there's a lot out there. You know, if your kid has any sort of illness, do not get a vaccine. I didn't know that as a parent. Doctors should know that, but they certainly didn't in our case. So it's just one of those things that we've learned a ton of things from. And having someone's, just the day-to-day operations in the hospital, talking to somebody about that, boy, it would have been nice to understand things. And I don't know if you guys can expound on that at all, but it's so important to have someone to talk to that's been through it. And that's where the Transverse Myelitis Association is so key.
I think too, Danny, if I can interject, that one of the biggest things that, and I actually had someone say this to me the very first week that we were in the hospital, and it has really stuck with me the whole time, is to remember that this is a marathon and it's not a race. And it's going to take time. And I remember sitting in the hospital that first week after diagnosis and Danny reading me a story about a little girl that was diagnosed in, I want to say, November, and it was January, and she was, in January was when she finally started to crawl. And I remember just being like, oh my gosh, like 3 months. And now here we are 2.5 years into it. And we would have been like ecstatic if she would have started, crawling after 3 months. But I just think that, that first day, if someone would have told you like, this is a lifelong change, it was so overwhelming. But just kind of taking a step back and remembering that we're not racing to the finish. We're getting to the finish line, wherever that may be, and we're getting there at our own pace, and we're celebrating successes as they come, and we're understanding that there's going to be plateaus along the way. Can't tell you how many number of times that we've been like, oh my gosh, we have not seen any progress, and it's been however long, and then all of a sudden the next week something, you know, just amazing or incredible happens. But have patience and just, you know, it's not going to happen overnight, but things are going to happen. And, you know, like Gigi said, your outlook on life just, it changes, and you start to accept the things that have come for you, and you make the best of them. So.
And lastly on that, for the parents that are listening that have kids, do not allow yourself to bottle up. Do not swallow let your sorrow swallow you so that it portrays to your child that you're depressed. If you need some time, step aside, cry your eyes out, come back, go to therapy, do whatever you got to do. Because if there's one thing we don't do in our family, is there's no can'ts, you know. We call her Sissy. Rylan's a sister, so she's always been our little Sissy. So Sissy has never said the word can't. She has just hold her hips while she waves her arms in the round, and she jumps up and down holding her Goldie, yes. So she can feel like the whole, she can be part of the whole, and she's never told can't. And negativity is not allowed in front of our kids, because there's room for negativity. There's room for grieving. There's room for all that. And important for parents, take the time to fix yourself as you're fixing your child. Take the time to step back and get help that's needed. During that point, I don't think Nikki and I can remember a more depressing point in our lives than, you know, that month or 2 months not knowing. And of course, we leaned a ton on each other, but we also had support with family. And so sometimes if you're stressed, you need to step aside and fix yourself a little bit, because you certainly can't help your child if you can't help yourself in some of those instances. So it's very important to keep your positive outlook. That was one of the biggest things. I remember watching a TM video on YouTube, and it had this horribly, and it's still out there, and I don't know where it's at, but it's this horribly dreary, sad funeral home type of a music behind it, and quite frankly, it made you want to grab a noose and a chair by watching this. And that's not transverse myelitis. That's not what it has to be. So when we did our video, we asked Chitra and everyone involved, Roberta and Sandy, let's put some happy music behind this. It can be heartfelt, but it's not going to be like we're going to a morgue. We're living life. We continue to live life. We're taking the girls to Disney World next time, and you just got to live, and you got to live positively. And when you do have negative moments, make sure they're not in front of your kids.
Thank you. Thank you both very much for those words of wisdom for parents. And we have just a couple of minutes. I don't want to get too long, but Gigi, any last comments, any words that you want to share before we wrap it up?
Sure. I mean, it's definitely transverse myelitis or any diagnosis can be very difficult, but there is a lot of support out there available, you know, through the TMA as well. And it's just, yeah, it is possible to live with and to be happy and to have a fulfilling life. And it sounds kind of cheesy, but it is true.
It's very true.
It is very true, very true. Well, thank you to each of you for sharing and being so open and candid about such a very personal experience. And I hope that those listening and us sharing stories, that we're able to support our community and one another so that we can seek to be the best advocates. I think that kind of sums it up, fighting for ourselves and our children. Thank you very much, and I hope you all have a great
day. Very good. One last statement from Nikki and I is, if there's a family listening that would like further discussion, please contact the Transverse Myelitis Association, and they can get you in contact with us, because we're an open book. We'd like to help anyone who needs some help.
And
thank you,
Gigi.
So much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much, all of you.